The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, the last show of the week. It's already Friday, and we've got a lot to get to on this final program. We're going to go through some listener and reader feedback, some of you commenting on the programs. Yesterday's show in particular, our 500th episode. On yesterday's program, we played you some clips from previous programs and a few bloopers right there at the end. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that program, you can get to that podcast at thetrumpet.com or at kpcg.fm. So we'll get to some listener feedback and also some emails we've gotten in response to the trumpet briefs that we've sent out over the last week. Coming up here in just a bit, we'll also look at the political crisis right here in Britain. If you're in America or elsewhere in the world, you probably haven't gotten quite as much in the news on this subject, given everything else that's happening. But it's certainly getting plenty of coverage here in the UK, and I'll try to bring you up to speed on that as well. There's also some stunning remarks made by the former Secretary of State, John Kerry. Some of his thoughts and views on peace in the Middle East will, I guess this was released either today or yesterday by one of the Israeli TV stations. And there's quite a few people in Israel that are upset by what the Secretary of State, the former Secretary of State, had to say. So we'll look at that in just a little bit as well. And also coming up later in the program, we'll be previewing my father's latest Key of David program, actually the one that he just taped this week. He recorded it, I believe, on Wednesday, November 8th. So this will be the program that will play next weekend on television. It was about the recent mass shooting in Sutherland, Texas. So that'll be coming up, a short preview of that particular program coming up in the next segment. Well, in Ezekiel 33, you have this dramatic prophecy about God's prophet or watchman. Really, those two terms are used interchangeably. God's prophet is watching and warning, and it says at the end of Ezekiel 33, people are aware of the message, verse 30 brings out. They come and listen. They listen, but they won't do the words, or they won't heed the warning. But it says at the end of that chapter that when all of these prophecies come to pass, and lo, it will come, it says, then shall they know. Then they're going to know that a prophet has been among them. And so, this shows us that what God's servant sees and proclaims, this world will soon see. They'll soon see it. They don't accept it yet. Most of them don't accept it now. But it just shows how persistent, how consistent this watchman has to be in declaring that message, declaring that truth, even when there are so many who ignore the warning or who bury their heads in the sand. I was reading Joel Hilliker's trumpet brief early this morning and just enjoying how refreshing it is to just get God's perspective on all of these scandals of the day. It seems like there's not a day that goes by now without another celebrity or politician or whoever that's the latest sexual pervert. And in this trumpet brief, Joel Hilliker's just bringing out what God has to say about the roles, the God-ordained roles of husband and wife, father and mother, and the laws of marriage. And then he gets to one point in the trumpet brief and says, if all this sounds backward and barbaric and foreign to you, it's because you have gone along with a society that has completely repudiated every bit of it, repudiated this truth of God, all of these laws of God. I mean, if it sounds backward and barbaric to you, that's because you've just gone along with the world. That's the way God's truth seems to those in this world. We're just, as he explained, I mean, we're just too advanced and civilized, we think, too sophisticated to ever consider any of that biblical nonsense. Well, he says later in the brief, he says, our society has renounced God's standards and laws. It mocks his morality and flouts his definitions of right and wrong. God condemns fornication. We embrace it. He condemns adultery. We accept it. He commands that sex be confined to within marriage, and society sneers, he writes. And then suddenly, suddenly we decide that we don't like some of the effects. Suddenly, because of all of this sin, just rampant sin, and now everyone's concluded that, hey, some of these effects aren't good. Some of these effects aren't right. We've got to take action. We've got to go after men. We've got to go after toxic masculinity. Brad McDonald had a piece on that the night before. Satan's on the march. Satan and his demons. We'll talk more about that in the second segment. That's really what my father gets into in that new program that'll be out next weekend. The spirit world that's behind all of this violence, all of these atrocities, all of this sin. Hilliker continues in the brief. He says, finally, and that is exactly what we're seeing, the effects, the inevitable effects of the choices we have made. That's what we're seeing. We've made choices. Deuteronomy 30, look at the last few verses. God says, choose life. Choose the way of blessings. Choose obedience. We haven't chosen those things. We've chosen the opposite. We've chosen disobedience and death and curses, and they are setting in. We are reaping what we've sown. If you haven't read that trumpet brief, I would assume it'll be posted later today on Joel Hilliker's blog page. But if you haven't yet subscribed to the trumpet brief, we have nearly 20,000 people subscribing to that, and a significant portion of them opening those emails and going through the material every single day. And we're still getting a strong response each week to those briefs as they go out each evening. But you can subscribe at thetrumpet.com and get that sent to your mailbox, your email box, every single day. That email blast that really will keep you right up to date, even if you can't get over to the website as frequently as you would like. That trumpet brief is an excellent way to just stay right on top of the most significant headlines of the day. Well, as for Theresa May's government, it's not looking very good. There's quite a bit in the Spectator and the Telegraph and other publications today. Just so many scandals, including sexual scandals, just like with the United States. It says here at the Spectator, does Theresa May's zombie government even want to survive? I mean, it's not looking like it even cares to survive these crises. It said, had Mrs. May a majority of 100 or more, as she was widely expected to win in June's election, remember that. We had quite a lot to say about that election. I mean, she made it through. She still is prime minister. But as we said at the time, I mean, here she called those elections just a few months previous to that because she thought it was the easiest way to go about to expand the reach of her party to get a bigger majority. It was just obvious. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn was such a radical, such an extremist. Let's have another election and let's get a bigger majority. Let's get a majority of 100 or more, as the Spectator writes here. Had she done that, as she was widely expected to do, then such travails, together with the resignation of her defense secretary, the pornography allegations against her effective deputy, and the suspension of a backbench MP on charges which have been referred to the police would be hugely damaging, a hugely damaging distraction. As it is, they present an immediate existential crisis. I mean, had she gained that majority, yes, this would still be a series of crises, but more in terms of it just being a distraction. As it is, I mean, this is in, I mean, she's in danger of collapsing her government. It's not just a question of whether the government can survive, but does it even want to, the Spectator asks. Well, then it goes to talk about Brexit and how that, look, the best way to make this break is to do it with boldness, to make a clean cut and to move on and to move forward with confidence, knowing that you're opening up the UK economy to the world. And that you can compete with the EU for trade and investment and such. As it is, though, Spectator says it looks as if Brexit is being enacted in the spirit of a damage limitation exercise where we pay large sums in order to retain some of the privileges that we had before. And so this is Britain on the way out and now in the midst of a governmental crisis. And when you look at the alternative to a Theresa May government, it's frightening. As we were saying, coming out of that June election, look at how much power, look at how much popularity the Corbyn gang has. Stephen Daisley at The Spectator, he says, if the Tories fall, this will be regarded as a golden age of stability. In other words, if you think Britain's government is broken now, just wait until Jeremy Corbyn gets in there. Daisley says that Britain's just becoming a global punchline. And now the government's in crisis. Another piece from The Spectator, it says, mash this all together, the incompetence of ministers, the demented finger-pointing of Pestminster, the sacking of MPs for knee-touching, the grating, weepy, sore loserism of politicos who hate Brexit, the conspiratorial mush of the idea that Russia is secretly commanding Brits' minds and Britain's future, and you have a snapshot of a political elite in freefall. They've lost it. All of them, not just the Tories, but also the gleeful Corbynistas who are as up to their neck in the sex pest panic and Brexit derangement syndrome as any of the folks in cabinet. They all seem to be abandoning reason and normalcy and even democracy for the temptations of conspiracy theorizing and witch hunts. And it says here, finally, I can't remember a time in my life when the political class has felt so disconnected, not only from everyday people, but from sense itself. That's from The Spectator. Here again, you think it's bad today? Look who's waiting in the wings. We had a lot to say following that election, even though Corbyn didn't win, the gains that he made. The gains that he made. Richard Palmer was writing back at the time. This is, again, going back to June at thetrumpet.com. And he said there, if you look over the resumes of Labour's top leaders, I mean, you see a lot of dangerous commonalities there, top to bottom in that party. Richard said, whether it's running an organization that believes Britain is no less sociopathic than the Islamic State, or believing that the British invented racism, all of them have a deep-seated hatred of the West and what it stands for. A deep-seated hatred for the West and everything that it stands for. And these are the ones waiting in the wings. These are the ones waiting for Theresa May to trip up. Well, it talks about all the tithes. The ties that, like in the case of Jeremy Corbyn, he's got ties to all of these radical Muslim terrorist groups. We played this montage for you back at the time. I think it was when Richard might have subbed in for me a few months ago. But here's just a sampling of some of these labor leaders that are now chomping at the bit to gain control of the powers of government here in the UK.
You see, I don't want to just bring down the government anymore. I want to destroy the system.
How do we change the system? We've got to demand systemic change. I'm honest with people. I'm a Marxist.
I suppose some people will judge that on balance, Ma did more good than harm. We can't say that about the
what?
Nazis.
What was the good bit? Remind me what the good bit was.
Serious,
well,
I want to first of all say thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. And say that tomorrow evening it will be my pleasure and my honour to host an event in Parliament where our friends from Hezbollah will be speaking. I'd also invited friends from Hamas to come and speak as well. Unfortunately,
on Northern Ireland, you didn't just deal with Sinn Féin. You dealt with the IRA three weeks after the Brighton bomb, in which the IRA had tried to destroy the democratically elected government of this country. You invited two convicted IRA terrorists to the House of Commons.
They were former prisoners who had come out of prison, women who had come out of prison, came to Parliament, actually in a meeting that had been arranged long before, to talk about prison conditions and rehabilitation of prisoners.
IRA.
Is there anything wrong with that since they had a spent conviction?
They had their organisation had just tried to blow up the British government.
The whole history.
Did you not think about that?
Of course I thought about it, and
you still invited them in?
And I wanted a peace process.
Invite them in. If they want to blow up the British government, hey, you got to sit down with them. And Hezbollah. And Hamas, too. This is the Corbyn gang. I'm a Marxist. We got to destroy the system. And then you had Miss Abbott there saying that Mao did more good than harm. That's potentially the next government in the United Kingdom. Richard's piece back from June, he quoted, I think it was a Telegraph article, talking about just the financial ruin that would come along with that party, how that Corbyn promises, this is from the Telegraph, an economic ruin so great it would make the 1970s look like a golden age of British prosperity. Richard says, before the election, Mr. Corbyn's politics were considered so extreme that many, even in his own party, were against him. Now he has proved that these policies can actually be a vote winner. And the moderates in the Labour Party are changing course. They're getting behind the radical agenda. They're changing course, getting behind the radical agenda. This is the way to win now. You see some of the same things happening within the Democratic Party in the U.S. Bernie Sanders followers, the far-left socialist, and how that some of the extreme views that he had 2, 3, 4 years ago, there's more and more Democrats just embracing them. Now the Democrats, like the Republicans, have their divisions between the Bernie Sanders camp and the Hillary Clinton camp and the Barack Obama camp, but still, Sanders is in a pretty good position himself, just like Jeremy Corbyn. And yet look at what these politicians believe and think, even about their own country, even about their own nation. I think we have an article coming out here at thetrumpet.com. Again, just talking about the spread of communism. All those articles, I went through a few of them last week, following the 100-year anniversary of the Russian Revolution and just the wave of destruction that communism has brought to this earth. And yet still, on college campuses today, I mean, these kinds of ideas and these kinds of policies, they win popular support. No problem. No problem. We had an article again earlier this year, Revenge of the Youth, talking about higher education, saying you're more likely to run into a supporter of the Green Party on a university campus today than a supporter of the Conservative Party. And the Green Party is just a tiny little thing. They make up like 1% of politics here in the UK. But it's so far to the left on your typical university campus, that's what you encounter as a young person. And so then it's small wonder that these young people are graduating from university with such radical views. It's no wonder someone like Jeremy Corbyn is gaining more and more popularity. Well, the UK government in crisis. Germany, same thing in Europe. We've talked a fair bit about that over the last few weeks. This New York Times article says that usually it takes about 6 weeks to form a government. And, well, we're now past that. We're a week or so past that. And Ms. Merkel, she's still trying to patch together this Jamaican coalition. And what if she can't? What if she calls for another election? She'll be on the way out. And then who will be waiting in the wings in that region of the world? Boy, look at the world today. Lots and lots of trouble, just as your Bible prophesies. These John Kerry remarks. This was from the Times of Israel. The sound quality on these clips is not great. And I'm not sure who it is he's interviewed with. But in any event, he gives some pretty shocking insights into what he thinks about the pursuit of peace in the Middle East, specifically between Israel and the Palestinians. Notice what he says first about the Palestinians and how they've conducted themselves over these last many years. This is clip one.
And the Palestinians have done an extraordinary job of remaining committed to nonviolence. And in fact, when the Intifada took place, they delivered nonviolence in the West Bank. This is overlooked by the general population because it's not a topic of discussion. Why? Because the majority of the cabinet currently in the current Israeli government has publicly declared they are not ever for a Palestinian state.
So Israel's the problem, and the Palestinians are committed to nonviolence. In fact, they've done an extraordinary job in their commitment to nonviolence. I mean, try telling that to all of the knife victims in the West Bank and Jerusalem. That spate of knife attacks just from a couple years ago. And then these horrific episodes of a Palestinian breaking into a West Bank home and just slaughtering Jews where there's just blood all over the kitchen floor. Three teenage boys kidnapped, murdered by Hamas in 2014. I believe that was in the West Bank. I think that's what he's referring to primarily, Mr. Kerry. They conveniently just kind of turn a blind eye to what Hamas does from the Gaza Strip and say that anything Abbas does in Ramallah, everything going on in the West Bank, everything going on in East Jerusalem, well, there's just an extraordinary commitment and effort to nonviolence. I mean, they very nearly took over the Temple Mount. There was weapons coming in and out of the Temple Mount just a few weeks ago. Maybe a couple months ago, he mentions the Intifada. I mean, it was the second Intifada that forced Israel to construct a 465-mile security barrier. Israel had to erect this security barrier because of Palestinian violence. That's the truth. That's what there was an article I think I read on this program just from last year, where Secretary of State John Kerry himself went over there to confer with Benjamin Netanyahu about the Palestinian attacks on Jews. Well, now he's out of office. This is the Secretary of State for the United States. This is America's chief diplomat from just 10 months ago. Here's what he had to say in that exchange, clip two.
If you see 40,000 kids marching up to the wall every day with signs saying, give us our rights, I mean, I don't think Palestine is going to be immune forever to civil rights movements that have swept other nations in the world. And somehow Israel is ignoring this today. That's not leadership.
Israel's not leading, and pretty soon there's going to be an uprising in among the Palestinians. That's what he's saying. I don't see how it can hold for much longer. This so-called commitment to nonviolence, they're going to have an uprising like we've seen in other parts of the world. I mean, you can't expect the Palestinians to be committed to nonviolence for much longer, says the former Secretary of State. He went on to say this, clip three.
I'll be amazed if in the next 10 years we don't see some young leader come along who says we've tried nonviolence for the last 30 years and look, it hasn't gotten us anything.
He says he'll be amazed if they don't have another leader come along. After, I assume, after the authoritarian Abbas dies, because he's not leaving office otherwise. But a young leader that comes along and says, look, for the last 30 years, nonviolence hasn't gotten us anything. I mean, really, that take, it's worse than a left-wing worldview. It's really a disgusting view, a disgusting distortion of the facts. And this, as I say, this was America's top diplomat just 10 months ago. Isaiah 59 and verse 8, I read this in class this morning. The way of peace they know not. I mean, do you really think that thinking that you just heard in those three sound bites, do you think that's going to produce peace? That kind of lashing out at Israel. And it's not like one side is completely, you know, perfect and the other one not. The problem is with man on both sides. But do you think that kind of radical leftist thinking is going to solve the problems of the Middle East? You think it's going to bring peace to the region? Herbert Armstrong has in his booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, he has a lot to say there about human government, the problem with human government, and all the promises that they make, and all the talk about peace. But human government has failed the people of this world, and certainly those diplomats, those ones who are out there trying to work peace. Well, it's exactly as the prophet Jeremiah says. They cry out, peace, peace, when there is no peace, but they don't know the way to peace, like Isaiah 59 says here. I mean, you can just talk about it and say peace, but look at what we have. And look at the way. I mean, look at the way Mr. Kerry is suggesting that we go about solving this problem. Look, there's probably going to be a young man to come along that's charismatic that says, hey, we've tried nonviolence long enough. And when he comes along and when the uprising or the movement happens, you can expect individuals like Mr. Kerry to say, well, you can't blame them. You can hardly blame them. I mean, they've been trying nonviolence, and Israel has been uncooperative. Israel hasn't been giving leadership or providing any kind of fair or just leadership. Mr. Armstrong says in his booklet, when we take a hard, cold, realistic view of conditions and trends, they do point inevitably to a fast approaching world crisis of combined nuclear war, starvation, uncontrollable disease epidemics, crime, and violence. I mean, if you take a realistic view of conditions today, the trends, you can know where this is headed. I mean, it's headed for an explosion in the Middle East. We've gone through those prophecies before, Zechariah 14 and others about the division of the city. East Jerusalem, it's going to be taken over violently, and that's going to lead right up to the rest of Zechariah 14, which is really an awesome, beautiful prophecy about the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And people from all over the world finally observing the Feast of Tabernacles, God's annual holy days. That's the truth of the gospel. That's the subject we've been discussing in recent classes here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Coming up later in the program, we're going to be going through some feedback we've gotten. If you'd like to contribute to the discussion, you can send emails to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
My father recorded a TV program on Wednesday of this week on the mass shooting in Texas, and he talked about God as the solution, saying that there were again two sides here, both bitterly against the other. But he said that both sides need to turn to God. Here's what he had to say in that TV taping, clip 4.
But I might mention also, of course, that the sooner we respond to God's counsel or His vision, the sooner we're going to solve our problems. So we have two questions here. Why so much violence and bloodshed? And why is it increasing so fast? What is happening? It's increasing exponentially in this country. And I think anybody can see that. And if they're honest, I believe they'll accept that.
It really is increasing. I mean, you have some in the gun lobby that are saying, or that try to say that really this is not that unusual. This is, you know, we've always had these kinds of incidents. That's why we need guns, so that we can protect ourselves. But look, it is getting worse. There's violent acts are happening today. I mean, you wouldn't have dreamed of something like this happening several generations ago. But then the other side that thinks that we can solve all the problems by just a gun confiscation, they're wrong too. Revelation 12, my father goes through this passage in this program as well as a couple of other, just really sobering prophecies. Again, I'd encourage you to watch the entirety of this program. It'll be out next week. I just wanted to give you a little bit of a preview here today. But in Revelation 12, many of you are very familiar with this passage. Verse 7 says, "And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven." So here is this war, this war. My father discusses this in the in this program he taped on Wednesday. Here's clip five.
So the devil and his millions of demons made another war against God. This is the second one. The other one was in, you can read about it in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28. But here we have Satan cast to this earth with millions of demons, and Satan is the father of liars. There's no truth in him, it says in John 8 and verse 44. And he was a murderer from the beginning. And he and all those murderous demons are cast to this earth and now confined to this earth. And we believe we can prove that happened almost 32 years ago in 1986.
That's my father from Wednesday's taping. All of these demons cast down to this earth, now confined to this earth. There's no more place for them in heaven. And because of that, there's rejoicing in heaven. Verse 9, it says, "And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him, cast into this earth, and now confined to it, as my father said." And verse 10 says, "And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night." And of course, now we're drawing close to the end of this age and the establishment of God's kingdom. But verse 12 mentions that when he's cast down, I mean, the heavens rejoice. The earth is going to rejoice when Satan and the demons are finally put away at the return of Christ. Commenting on verse 10, that verse I just read there, here's one final clip from my father's program. Clip 6.
Verse 10. He said, "And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now come salvation and strength." And it goes on to talk about Satan being an accuser of the brethren. He's the one that divides us. He gets one side against the other. And he's divided this nation. He's divided Britain. And how did he do that? Well, he gets the people taking one side, let's say, on one side wants to dispose of all the guns. The other side wants the guns to protect themselves. And really, neither side actually wants to go to God and see what God says. The only being that has a solution. Now, look, these are serious problems. And isn't it time that we really want to receive God's word? That we don't want smooth things. We don't want deceits. We want the truth. That's the only way we can solve these problems.
It's the only solution, turning to God. Going to God and seeing what God has to say. Well, he has a lot to say about why the world is the way it is today, why it's in darkness. We touched on that again in class this morning from Isaiah 60. So much darkness. Jesus' return, of course, is going to illuminate this earth spiritually. But today we're dwelling in darkness. "Woe unto the inhabitants of the earth and sea," it says in Revelation 12 and verse 12. I mean, it's so bad. God even says, "Woe unto the sea, for the devil's come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time." And it's like my father says in this same program. Again, I'd encourage you to look out for that next week. But he says the fact that he knows he has but a short time, I mean, that's a positive as well. There's good news here. Because there's a time limit on Satan's reign. He knows his time is about up. He knows he's about to be booted off the throne of this earth. And that's good news. I mean, that's cause for rejoicing. Yet at the same time, Satan is now here. He's filled with wrath. And so it's also sobering. I mean, we've got to really fight We've got to really fight against the devil and his influence. We've got to be on guard constantly. We've got to be vigilant. We have to turn to God. We have to look to God for strength and power and protection. Because he's coming after us. Verse 13 says, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. I mean, he went right after the Church of God following the death of Herbert Armstrong. That date that my father mentioned in the program, 1986. As soon as Mr. Armstrong died, look at what he did. Look at what Satan the devil did. And those demons, look at what they did to the worldwide Church of God. Look at what they did to all of those Laodiceans. And then, like my father says, in America Under Attack, I mean, he didn't just stop there at that church. He's coming after our nations. We're talking about the death of nations. These are the primary targets for the devil. God's church, the United States and Britain, and then little Israel. Let's blame Israel for all the problems with the Palestinians. Let's put the blame all on Israel and give the Palestinians and all of the violence and the knife attacks and the car rammings. Let's give that a complete and total pass. This is the world today. The world just before the return of Christ. We can be thankful to God that there is a time limit. We can be thankful that it's just a short time until the return of Christ. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. As I said earlier, we'll get into some feedback and a couple of other news items here in the next segment right after the break. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Those are some of the anti-Trump protesters showing up a year after the election a couple days ago and screaming at the New York City Washington Square Park. Fox News says many attendees at the end of the countdown let out varied shouts, shrieks, screeches, and yowls while standing in place, putting their head back and crying out towards the sky. It says the left-wing Refuse Fascism group. That's what they're out there refusing or protesting. Fascism, which is associated with the Revolutionary Communist Party. They're a communist party protesting fascism. They showed up with signs, drums, and a host of chants. A few hundred, and there was a Fox News report that said, according to one reporter that went there, that there was just about as many reporters on the scene. Can you believe that? I mean, this is a huge story. People screaming out their hatred for the President of the United States. That's got to get some widespread coverage. Same with this bike rider who gave that obscene gesture to the President's motorcade. I guess it was last weekend. Someone in the press pool from behind snapped a picture. It got on the internet, went viral right away. I mean, this is great. This is her First Amendment rights. Free speech. Flipping an obscene gesture to the President of the United States. Well, as it happens, She was a government employee who was later fired because she very proudly put it on all her social media sites and kept it there. This was a badge of honor. So she gets fired, which was the right thing to do. And then the media, here's the media again, rushing to her defense. This is her right. I mean, if she can't do that toward the president of the United States, what kind of fascist country are we living in? That's the news this week, some of it anyway, regarding President Trump. Meanwhile, you had this uplifting story over at CBS regarding the former U.S. President Barack Obama, clip 7.
We've known for a few weeks now that the former president would be reporting here to court sometime in November, but we just didn't know the date. Then suddenly yesterday, the typical groan associated with jury duty turned to glee when word spread that Mr. Obama would be reporting for his civic duty. The last time you had jury duty, chances are a chopper didn't capture your commute. And your fellow jurors, like Walter Palmer, didn't show off their summons like golden tickets.
It's an important duty for all of us, so if he's going to show up, I guess we all have to show up.
Upstairs, even non-jurors showed up, cell phones drawn.
That he is.
Sonal Joshi is a clerk in the building.
Did you lay eyes on him?
Yeah.
And what did that moment feel like?
Oh, God, it's gorgeous.
She was able to lay eyes on Mr. Obama, and he's gorgeous. This is CBS News reporting on President Obama showing up for jury duty, and people having their summons, their jury summons, holding on to it like golden tickets. Pretty good contrast there of the kind of coverage, even the extent to which they go out of their way to cover what was, some would say, under 100 screamers at this Washington Square Park. And then at the same time, on hand with a helicopter, a chopper, to follow Barack Obama to court. And then reporters on the ground to capture video of all of these onlookers taking snapshots with their camera and such. On one hand, he can do no wrong, the former president. The other one certainly can't do anything right. And the louder we scream in protest, the more coverage you're sure to get. Switching gears here now to some feedback that we've gotten over the past several days. This one here in response to yesterday's show. I enjoyed the lighthearted bloopers section at the end of the program. It made me think of one that we had on Trumpet Hour. This is from Callum Wood, who was interviewed on Trumpet Hour a while back. He appears on the show or is interviewed on the show every once in a while. It says, I was being interviewed by Joel Hilliker over Skype while sitting in a makeshift dining room office. During the process, my wife dropped a number of pots and pans in the kitchen, which the mic then picked up. It somehow survived the editing process. It is her little claim to fame on the program. She made her mark on Trumpet Hour. This one here from Saskatchewan says, if I were to pick one particular program that stands out to me, it would have to be the interview that you did with Nicholas Frank and his response when you asked him about Sue Gutenberg. He said he was boring. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to see the expressions on your face and Mr. McDonald's face. Thanks for the bloopers. I enjoyed the last one the most, sort of like a prelude to the famine of the word. And thanks to Sam for keeping you on your toes. That's from Canada. This one here comes from Oklahoma. I know I've said this before, but there is nothing like hearing Mr. Armstrong's voice going out over the airwaves. I really love the old clips. There's such power and zeal in his voice. Thank you for working so hard to do his memory justice by keeping the work he did in the forefront and trying to emulate that power and zeal. I gave a quote in class this morning, by the way. I think it was from 1978, where Mr. Armstrong described how it was for him coming into the church and coming to a knowledge of all of this truth. And he just said it became the most interesting, absorbing subject that you could ever get into. And it made everything else in this world just shrink by comparison, shrink to almost unimportance, total unimportance. And then he explained in this article how that he really tried to bring that enthusiasm, that professionalism, that zeal for the truth to the Plain Truth magazine, the World Tomorrow program, and so on. He really did set a great example in broadcasting or disseminating God's truth with power and zeal. This one here comes from right here in the Midlands in the UK. It says, "We're so grateful for everything God has accomplished through the radio program since its inception. At most, it's hard to keep up with the changes and the growth and the work nowadays. For instance, the new website, it's never been so informative and attractive. As for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, from its mustard seed beginning, it's now helping us keep up with the prophetic events as they unfold almost daily. Thank you, and for others, helping behind the scenes too. It's also inspiring to see how God has trained other men in the work to assist and even sub in for you." That from the Midlands, just down the road from us here at Edstone. This one here comes from Missouri, and she says, "Congratulations on your 500th program today. We've enjoyed them immensely. Thank you for all of your hard work and sacrifice, as well as your staff, to make this show possible. I wanted to pass along a card that my daughter made for you today. Here is a picture of it." And so she sends me a picture of little Emery's note and drawing. And it says here, "Dear Mr. Stephen Fleury, hi, my name is Emery, and I'm 7 years old. I've been listening to your trumpet daily. We listen to it every morning. You have been putting some different things I never heard before. It is amazing how it is your 500 radio show, or 500th, I guess, radio show, and they have been fantastic. Sincerely, Emery." And so she draws underneath that a picture of a happy anniversary cake on the right-hand side, and on the left-hand side, a nice garden salad. And to understand the picture, you need to go back and listen to the start of yesterday's program that's posted at thetrumpet.com. But thanks to Emery for sending me that special treat. It made the rounds here at Edstone yesterday. Got a lot of feedback from Sam and from his wife and from Kayla and from my wife. Just, they absolutely love it. So keep those wonderful little notes coming in if you happen to be one of our young listeners. And there are a few of you out there, I know. Couple more emails here. This one says, "Thank you. I like this feature." This is in response to, I think, last Friday's trumpet brief, which just summarized some of the highlights of the week. "It makes sure I don't miss any of the news articles during the week. Thanks to the trumpet staff for constantly improving the way we watch and pray." Another one here says, "I like the summary of the week in review. I try to keep a timeline of events. Sometimes I would have to click on the link to the Trumpet page article to get dates and more info to put in the timeline. The summary is very helpful." Another one, "Thank you for the great job that you're doing. You are a blessing to those who will heed and do. Please stay with it." Another one here, following the trumpet brief on Monday, "Why Mass Shootings?" It says, "Thank you for reinforcing what God's Spirit has filled my mind with already as I reflected on this massacre. I am at peace, but my heart aches." What about our Father's heart? He loves us and will work it out. Thank you, as always, for your profound updates in these perilous times. At least we understand there is a purpose being worked out here below. Most of all, we have a glorious beginning soon to happen on the face of the earth. The creation cries out for the coming of our Savior. This one here came in response to the November 7 brief, "Our German Politics Broken." It says, thanks very much for your article on German politics. I've been wondering what's happening there, as there has been precious little about it in the traditional news outlets. That's what's really so ridiculous about some of the coverage that you see. Some of the things that make headlines, particularly in the United States, and so much that's just completely ignored. This one in response to Brad McDonald's piece, the world needs more masculinity, not less. And she says, as a female, I'm so glad you addressed this issue. I actually received a call from a roofing company trying to sell me a new roof. I said Jason takes care of financial issues in our house, and I was rebuked. She ranted at me for placing authority in the hands of a man. I hung up during this tirade. Thank you so much for placing this article on the Trumpet Brief. Another one here says, in the 38 years I've served in public education, I've seen a lot. One disturbing sight has been the tearing down of men, as you describe in your piece. I've made an effort to hire young men. He works in education in, I think, Montana, as teachers and coaches that understand what a man truly represents so as to influence and mentor our young lost men at school. The influence has been exceptional. However, our societal ills and the far-left agendas are beginning to win out. He says it's demoralizing to continue to pour resources into interventions and so on. Well, he talks later about these old school policies he tries to put in place and says that he very much appreciates what Mr. McDonald wrote about on Wednesday. That's all that we have time for. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Go ahead and send us your feedback, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.